Welcome to Truth for Health, the rest of the story with your host, Dr. Lee for America. And today we're going to bring you truth that the media has covered up and refuses to disclose to the American public and the world about what has really been the legal underpinning that has allowed essentially the world plunge into tyranny under the pandemic of COVID illness that was unleashed on the world in early 2020 or late 2019. How did all of the countries around the world have such an orchestrated response at exactly the same time, in exactly the same ways? Who was behind it? How was it done to overturn so many of the sovereign laws of each country? And how did this happen here in America? And it's time now to go into that background, because this background legally leads into something that is unfolding right here in Arizona right now that the public doesn't know, with executive orders issued by the governor that are in place to create and implement, operationalize forced quarantine camps, forced vaccination. And this is something that is very hard for most Americans to wrap their mind around. But you have to understand there actually is a legal framework that has set all of this up. And there's no one better to explain that legal framework than our international attorney and the attorney for Truth for Health Foundation, who can guide us to understanding what were the building blocks in the law that the global predators put into play that have created this tyranny. And for those of you that would like to read more about the global predators and the long-term planning that went into this, I highly urge you to read Dr. Peter Bregan's book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. I have read every line of that book. I've been involved with him on it in the background. And I can tell you there is no better researched encyclopedia with references, over 1,000 references, describing the original source documents that the author and his researcher wife reviewed that led to the creation of that book. That will also add to what we're going to discuss today. And with me is Todd Callender, who is the founder of Disabled Rights Advocates, a law firm that has specialized in international disability law, as well as has been the lead attorney group on the DOD lawsuit in the United States against the vaccine mandates being forced on the military with an experimental COVID shot. And Todd Callender has an interesting background in many areas of law and business that are very relevant to what we're seeing. And in the course of this discussion today, you will hear him talk about all of that. Todd, welcome to the show. And just thank you for being here to talk about all of this. So I'm going to start with the big question of what exactly is the legal framework that you have seen operative over a number of years that has essentially allowed this vast global tyranny to unfold at warp speed in an orchestrated way, the same way in all of the countries around the world. So let's do a tyranny 101. How did they do it? What was their plan?
As most things, this becomes a bit of a history lesson because all of this has been planned for so very long. All of it relates into a function of how governments work, how the world economy works, how microeconomies work. It's all related, all planned in a very brilliant and homogenized way from some very smart people that effectively own all of the wealth, all of the assets on the planet. this group of people that go by various names are identified different ways. I like to refer to them as simply the owners of the owners, period, but they're at the end of the day, the owners of the Bank for International Settlements, which owns all the other private central banks on the planet. And to put it bluntly, if you think about it, they've controlled or owned or both everything that humans need to survive or even coexist. So that's the energy supply, the water supply, the food supply, the money supply, which allows us to, you know, use a medium of exchange to trade. In every aspect, our lives are controlled from that perspective. And it appears to me that around 1990 or so, there were so many people on the planet. China had a burgeoning, you know, growth factor, as did others, that the powers that be, the same owners we talk about, had decided that they have to initiate a global depopulation plan. And that meeting happened in Egypt in 1990, Egypt of all places. It's kind of interesting. And in that meeting, they figured out that, you know, it's very difficult when a population gets to a certain point to either control or kill them. And of course, historically, when populations were too big for the resources around them, then the leaders would, in fact, had some kind of a genocidal event, or perhaps even God himself would bring a plague. Whatever the case was, the operating assumption is that there are too many people and not enough resources. And that's actually what gave rise to this little catchphrase called sustainable development. So 1994 comes around, the Rio Climate Accords, and that's the mantra that they chose to justify and utilize and rationalize to the public, that we have this burgeoning global climate problem that is existing and will necessarily affect humanity and global populations, that they prophesize there will be earthquakes and floods and ozone and who knows, even the ice age coming back, for sake of argument. All of that is predicated upon a change in our climate, because there's nothing we can do about it. People can understand that weather has long affected humanity and populations, and most importantly, resources. So that was the predicate, the Rio Climate Accords. And out of that was born the Agenda 21, which is the agenda for the 21st century, where sustainability goals were developed and published. And countries that were signatory to this international convention made commitments vis-a-vis the United Nations framework. So the representatives from the various sovereign countries agreed on behalf of those countries, and everybody had to ratify and endorse what was agreed to. And that happens by virtue of ensconcing those very tenements into their national laws. So you get this pardon me, very top-down framework, where now we have, again, control of all of the natural resources. And now we've got control of the political resources, because they're convincing the populations who are going to suffer this, that they are not acting in their own best interest. There's too many of us. I think you might have even seen some years ago, this lady broke out at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez town hall and said, well, there's too many people, we have to eat the babies. This is how successful they have been in programming humanity into thinking that we are the problem, that it's anthropogenic existence. It's us that are causing all these problems. And that mantra is stated, relived, and restated all around the world in every country. And that's really what I see from an international perspective. I live outside the United States. I've lived all over the world, in fact. And I noticed that all these things are happening over and over in the same way. And so I started looking for how it was this homogenized approach, homogenized and very coordinated approach. How did that happen? And so I arrived at the very things that I talked about, the 1990 meeting, the 1994 Rio Climate Accords, Agenda 21, or Agenda for the 21st Century. And then out of those came the control that really we're seeing today. And how does one take over a whole population? How does one change a whole population's thinking at the same time? And so the powers utilized global health, public health, as a mechanism to do that. And people can rally around that. They're afraid of, you know, this boogeyman of a virus that cannot be seen, right, that kills people. Ebola, you know, comes to mind. They're always publicizing these kinds of things. So you have this wonderful boogeyman hiding in the closet that could attack at any given time, and we must prepare for this. You know, that's the psychological operation at hand. And so they agreed again internationally in 2005. They created the International Health Regulations. And those are based on the event of a global pandemic, a declared global pandemic. And every country that signed on to those regulations put in, again, to their local laws, because they have to by international agreement, national accord. again, the very same tenets, what happens in the case of a global pandemic. And in the United States, that was codified in 42 CFR, Part 71 and 72. And every country on the planet has similar regulations, in many cases, word for word. And it allows for, in every instance, a suspension of your human rights. Your human rights, your sovereign rights, your constitutional rights, charter rights, it doesn't matter. In all cases, it's a military approach, and it's the trick. The humans will trade sovereignty. They'll trade liberty for security. Over and over, this has worked for thousands of years. And in this particular case, in the COVID-19 pandemic, it has worked again to a large extent, probably not to the extent that they were hoping. A lot of people were aware that something was wrong. A lot of people, I think, divinely were whispered to in their ear and use their discernment to understand that things are not what they appear. So that's the basis of this whole response. And then you get into the execution of this response. So if the goal of the exercise, and let's go through those goals for a minute. They are in Agenda 21, there are a lot of them, but the three primary ones is the elimination of private property rights, the elimination of borders, that means elimination of sovereignty, and massive depopulation. So if those are the three goals of the exercise, how does one go about doing that? And in every case, it boils down to public health, that there's exigent circumstances, emergency that must be dealt with. Crisis is at hand, and we have to do something immediately. And that's exactly what happened in March of 2020. Adnan Tedros declared there's a global pandemic. They cashed in on a bond issued by the World Bank. Notably, it was valued in crypto SDR, special drawing rights. It's an international currency between nations from a basket of currencies, the one world currency, I guess you could call it. And that set the legal framework into action, whereby all of the signatories to the 2005 International Health Regulations had to use and enforce their own regulations that were based on that. And that's what we're seeing. A very martial law approach to this. People's constitutional rights are suspended. Everything is in the name of safety and security. And for that reason, people are treating their liberty for that, whether that's masks or testing or getting an experimental shot. I hope that makes sense.
Actually, it makes a great deal of sense. And it's very helpful, I think, for the public to understand the steps that have been taking place since at least 1990 that laid the groundwork for this sudden escalation in 2020 of the tyranny that certainly in America has been very different from anything in my lifetime. And what never made sense to me medically, which is why I started digging into what was really going on, was the fact that we've never in my medical career said, go home and get sicker. And when you get critically ill, come back and we'll put you in the hospital. It's like, what's that all about? Mm-hmm. Because our whole goal in medicine, I've spent a career in preventive medicine and early outpatient treatment of everything under the sun. We don't wait till stage 4 cancer to try and help treat a cancer. You try to screen for it, pick it up early, treat it early when it's treatable and responsible. Same is true with the viral illness. And that's what many of us started doing in March of 2020, is using our existing antiviral and anti-inflammatory and anticoagulant medicines in a coordinated way against COVID. And it was working. So what was going on that the government was saying otherwise? And, well, we can't do anything to treat this. This virus is untreatable, which flagrantly wasn't true. So you have just laid out what they did that set the stage for all of these regulations coming from the federal government down and affecting medical boards, pharmacy boards, governors, individual doctors, persecuting doctors. I mean, it's truly chilling what we've been going through.
It is. And bear in mind, you know, Doctor, you and I have spoken about this. Again, pardon me. That they've added now in another layer of this control paradigm. So in these experimental shots, phase three experimental shots, very clearly and certainly in the messenger RNA shots, that is both Moderna and Pfizer, they are utilizing messenger RNA to effectuate changes, genetic modification in all of the users. And there are very significant legal ramifications to that, because there's actually Supreme Court precedent on this that says the synthetic genome that arises from the use of mRNA results in the patent holders owning that new genome. That means effectually that all the people that got the shots are now the chattel property of the patent holders of those shots. So when I talked about the owners owning everything, now they are actually owning humanity. And part of the delivery device to those very shots we talked about, of course, are the lipid nanoparticles. That's where the messenger RNA is contained. And, you know, think about the lipid nanoparticles as little teeny bombers, and they're carrying a payload of RNA fragments. And they go inside of the cell after having disabled somebody's immune system in order to do that. And then they reprogram that person's body to do God knows what. We don't know. If you look at the filings for these investigational new drugs, they'll tell you what the ingredients are. They're lipid nanoparticles, polyethylene glycol, saline, and a few other items, but nothing notable. We did some mass spectrometry on it. The devil's in the details, and the details are, what are those messenger RNA fragments that they are reprogramming people to do or use? And so with that kind of control over what used to be humanity are now genetically modified people, it's really limitless as to the amount of control that they have on at least those people. Those of us that refuse to take the shots, you know, theoretically are still human and have some form of human sovereignty. But there's a huge population in the world, some of whom will be programmed to die, some of whom will be programmed to do something else. We really just don't know what that is.
Let's slow down on that. That is such a huge statement that you've just made, that I don't want our listeners to really miss the enormity of what you've just said. So let's go back very quickly. That there is precedent in the U.S. Supreme Court that genetic modification leads to the patent holders for that particular device, whatever it may be, then owning whatever was modified. Correct? Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. The case is called Myriad Genetics. It's a 2013 case. Let me give you the proper styling of this case.
So 2013, Myriad Genetics case before the U.S. Supreme Court.
That's right. Association for Molecular Pathology, versus Myriad Genetics. And in this case, if you were to go to page 6, for example, and halfway down, there's a sentence and it starts with, it is also. The holding of the case states that use of messenger RNA to effectuate a genetic modification of a genome, in this particular case, they were talking about a certain type of mouse. It doesn't matter, though. results in that new genome, that synthetic genome, the thing that was modified. Now that thing, that synthetic thing, belongs to the patent holders. This is U.S. law. This is what I call good U.S. law, meaning nothing's replaced it. You know, there's no new legislation that undoes this. This law is applicable today, and you can be assured that something similar to this is in every other country and arrives at the same conclusion. The precedent to this particular this case comes from Monsanto. Right? They have all these genetically modified seeds. They've been around for 20-some years, maybe even longer, and they've enforced their intellectual property rights all over the planet, saying that corn over there is genetically modified. I'm giving you, farmer, a license to grow it, but you don't own that. I own that corn, and I'm giving you a license to grow it and use it. And by the way, if you don't pay me for the use of that corn, then I'm going to take your stuff. And that's exactly what they've done all over the planet. So the legal precedent is there, where synthetic genomes are the chattel property, the intellectual property of the patent holders.
And I think that's important. It's critical for the listeners to understand. And I can see how in the court, under those circumstances, that was the ruling. One can understand that. It was intellectual property developed by the business. Okay. That's held in other areas of intellectual property development as well. However, and that's a huge however, we now are at the point where it's not a mouse that was genetically modified. It's not seeds for plants. It's human beings' bodies that are genetically modified by this experimental COVID shot, delivering mRNA or DNA into our cells and changing our own genetic makeup. And I want to emphasize that for our listeners, because the enormity of what that means and the implications for the people that got the shots is, and granted, I'm not judging negatively the people who chose to get the shot because they were manipulated to think they were doing the right thing. And they were not given all of this information. They were not given any risk assessment. So they were pawns in the bigger scheme that you are describing that's been in the plans for a long time. But
yes.
So now what happens is you raise some critical questions. What happens to these synthetically modified genomes that are human beings who thought they were human beings?
Sorry. They're not human beings. That's the issue. You've nailed it. And this is the real danger to it. Genetically modified genome, they are genetically modified people. They are no longer humans for purposes of the law, which is described as Homo sapiens. And that is defined. These, as I understand it, the genetically modified humans are called Homo borgensis, the new species. So the question, what I like to do to demonstrate this is let us say that you have a dog and you're an evil person and you shoot that dog in the head and kill it. Can you be tried and convicted for homicide, for murder? And the answer is no, because the elements of that crime require you to have the unlawful taking of a human life. That dog is not a human. So if you extend that thought process to this particular case where you have a new species, do they enjoy human rights? Do they enjoy protections against homicide? Do they enjoy privacy rights? Do they enjoy any rights at all? And the short answer to the question is seemingly no. So if on a global basis, if somebody wanted to prosecute these people for genocide, you might find some trouble in that analysis from a legal perspective. Because if these people willingly took these shots, they willingly, for consideration of the shot, became somebody else's property. So even look at the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. You can't own another human being. However, these aren't human beings exactly. That's how nefarious and how detailed this planning gets and how homogenized it is globally.
Well,
like I said, they own everything.
Well, and I realize this is very hard, and we're going to go into more detail after the break, but I realize this is very, very hard for people to wrap their mind around. But if you continue the logic from the corn and the mouse case, then it makes it, there is a diabolical logic to it. And that is particularly the case when they willingly took the shot. Then I want us to explore after the break what we're seeing in the hospitals and what I, our medical team for the foundation is involved with almost every day, is that unvaccinated people are the target of the death protocols in the hospitals. And this then has very ominous implications for the future of rounding up the unvaccinated people and forcing them into quarantine camps or forcing them into vaccination. We're already seeing and just announced today in Maryland that the National Guard is being mobilized to administer remdesivir in nursing homes. And remdesivir as a drug is highly toxic. We'll come back to that after the break. We've been talking with Todd Callender, one of the founders of Disabled Rights Advocates Law Firm, international law specialty. And we've been looking at the international legal frameworks of what has gone on with the tyranny that we're experiencing in our country under the COVID pandemic. This is Dr. Lee for America, and we'll be right back after the break.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC-11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC-11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC-11. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
This is Dr. Lee for America, back with the second half of Truth for Health. The rest of the story the media is not telling you, sponsored by Truth for Health Foundation, our 501c3 public charity that is advocating for medical freedom, supporting our citizens, healthcare workers, and military members across the country who are having their freedoms intruded upon. We ask you to donate to support our efforts in the court of law, the court of public opinion, and educational programs. thank you for joining us today for the second half of Truth for Health, the rest of the story. We are here with attorney Todd Callender, an international law specialist and founder of Disabled Rights Advocates, LLC, that is representing a lot of our military members in the suits against the Department of Defense over the illegal vaccine mandates with the experimental COVID shot. We were talking in the first hour with Attorney Callender explaining the legal framework that has been being built and put in place since 1990 over with the entire globe being affected by these legal structures, the legal framework, the agreements that were put in place with the goals of Agenda 21, elimination of property rights, elimination of borders, and massive depopulation, because the world leaders decided there were too many people. And we, the people, don't get to decide who lives and who dies under these new agreements. And we're talking about all of that today in a really a very powerful segment on this. And leading out of what we discussed in the first hour with setting the stage for the legal framework, I want to ask Attorney Callender what his team, many of whom are military whistleblowers, what have they uncovered about what is happening on the ground in the state of Arizona under the cloak of secrecy and the governor's executive orders that the public does not know anything about? So, Todd, tell us what's happening here in Arizona that your team has recently uncovered. And we, with the foundation, are working with you on all of that. So let us know to share with the public what's happening.
Thank you. Yeah, you actually hit on the most important part of this, which is how does it translate that global control paradigm? How does that translate from, you know, international through national, you know, down to the individual? And if you look at, you know, like a pyramid, there are so many individuals at the bottom layer, it requires a very regimented command and control structure. And so we talked about how it went from international regulations into the national regulations. Again, that's 42 CFR Part 71 and 72. And this is exactly what happened. Some of our expert witnesses, clients had dug up some information and shared it with the Truth for Health Foundation and ourselves in our capacities trying to help the public good. And when I first saw it, I didn't really fully understand it. It was about intergovernmental agreements. And I started reading through it, and it's all based on funding. And some of our other work together, Doctor, you might recall, has to do with stopping hospital homicides. And how was it that these hospitals were able to take a patient in, diagnose them with COVID, and then 7 to 10 days later, that very same patient who went in with a broken arm comes out the backside dead? Last year, we saw a study that said 66% of the people that visit a hospital now don't come out the same way they came in, not through the front doors. Again, it's a funding paradigm. And what we discovered is that everything that every hospital that accepted CMS funding, public funding, was obligated to follow these health protocols, NIH designed, CDC designed health protocols, which included remdesivir, midazolam, two poisons given to our patients, no matter what their criteria were. So now I'm looking at an intergovernmental agreement between a county. So in this particular case, Cochise County in Arizona, related to this very same CMS funding mechanism. And it's an agreement under that very same bit of legislation we talked about, 42 CFR Parts 71 and 72, which in 2016, so some years ago, 7 years ago, provided for, among other things, COVID passports. So this was envisioned a long, long time before COVID was ever even thought of. And perhaps that's not fair to say. The World Bank was financing COVID-19 test kits in 2017 and 18. COVID wasn't named COVID-19 until 2020. So not sure how they arrived at that. The point is, this was all set up earlier than 2016. 2016 created the enabling legislation, and now we find counties and the state of Arizona entering into agreements with the federal government under this very same rubric of laws and public health, emergency public health. Part of all of that also, it meshes with what we saw in the hospitals. So hospital has federal funding. They have to follow the protocols. In 2006, public health was merged with law enforcement. And this year,
2006.
That's correct.
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you, but 2006.
Yes, that's correct. And
wow.
One of the documents our team dug up that arises from the 2006 protocol, the project of merging law enforcement with public health, is a framework. This is what they dug up and sent: a framework for improving cross-sector coordination for emergency preparedness and response. This is the actual, you know, regulations, the actual protocols where hospitals are part of law enforcement. And we discovered this trying to get patients out of the hospital. We knew that they were being battered. They were being starved. They were being given drugs against the authorization of the patient or their families or the medical POA. All of that is criminal behavior. And so we would call local police, sheriffs, and ask for a health, safety, and welfare check on the patient. And we came to understand on a national level that the police would not get involved. And when they did get involved, it was usually to arrest or carry away the loved ones of the patient. They would threaten them or actually arrest them for trespass. It did actually happen. And where we were lucky enough to get a police officer to find that there was criminal conduct, the investigation went nowhere despite there being a case number attached and felony allegations in play. So we really saw the practical application of law and public health merging. Lastly, the hospitals are being remunerated under the ICD-10 codes. Right? These, again, are international health codes. They're all the same no matter what country you go to, and that is for the purposes of remunerating the healthcare facility for taking care of this patient. And one other thing we found is that when patients enter that hospital setting, again, perhaps for a broken arm, they're given this diagnostic code. It's ICD-10 something, something, something. And that diagnosis code follows them through the end. And in some cases, it's a prognosis code, meaning that if they are given this particular code, you can be assured that they're not coming out of the front end of that hospital. That every protocol that happens between the time of admission and the time they die is being followed by NIH protocol and governed by these ICD-10 codes. The same thing applies to Arizona, where we now have money coming from the federal government going to the county via or state or both via an intergovernmental agreement saying, here's our money. And if you're going to take our money, you got to go with our program. And in this particular case, that is public health. You need to make these quarantine facilities. Some people might call them FEMA camps, whatever you want to refer to them as. They are designed under the 2016 regulations, 42 CFR, to confine people against their will, against their constitutional rights, no due process, or actually a little teeny bit of due process they put in. I'm not entirely sure why. And the CDC will decide whether or not you can be free or not, or whether you can even travel interstate, so much less internationally. All of that is being implemented right now. This is what our team had come to find and shared with us both. And then the question is, you know, what are people of Arizona going to do and other states? Because we're coming to find this is happening in Alaska and various other states, given that this is a global response, given that this is all homogenized through these very same laws, you can be assured something very similar to this is happening all over the planet and amongst all the different states.
It's absolutely chilling. And I can attest personally to what's going on in the hospitals, because our Foundation Medical COVID Care Strategy Team has been doing these hospital advocacies and attempts to rescue patients since September. So literally for the last almost 6 months now, we have been every day, 7 days a week, responding to requests to help family members get their loved one out of the control of the hospital. And we have seen exactly what you're talking about. They force remdesivir, which is toxic and causes kidney failure. They force ventilation and they exclude the family. They prevent the POA, the patient's power of attorney, from advocating for the patient. They don't let religious people visit the patient, and they don't administer the very medicines that could help the patient recover. And those medicines are not just ivermectin. In fact, ivermectin alone at that stage of illness is rarely effective by itself. But they're eliminating fluids and vitamins, as you mentioned quickly earlier. And they are also mentioning, they are also failing to give basic antibiotics, corticosteroids to decrease in inflammation, and they're failing to give anticoagulants. So that's happening. And then we look at what's going to happen to the people that are particularly unvaccinated people who are being forced into these quarantine facilities against their will and against what used to be the rule of law. And what's going to happen to them? What are the options? And what are some things that we need to be educating the public that they need to do to prepare themselves?
Yeah. So all rights are suspended in matters of public health. That's what we can take away from this. You sent me something earlier today. I'm not surprised to see it. The Maryland National Guard is distributing remdesivir in nursing homes. How and why? So those healthcare practitioners who refuse to take the shots were all put out of jobs. We don't have room for you in the hospital, so you're going to have to go somewhere else. Those people were replaced by National Guard and FEMA employees, some of which were also not vaccinated. Right? So the hypocrisy of that is actually stellar. But when you think about the reasoning for it, what they want to do is not have anybody interrupt their command and control. And part of it, it's really a hospital homicide. It's really murder for hire in the hospitals. Everybody's been worried about these FEMA death camps. You know what? They already exist. They're called hospitals, at least in this case, where there is a health pandemic, medical emergency. That's how this happens. So to your point, how does one stop this? And looking at this again from a very legal perspective, what we came to find is, again, all of this is happening under emergency orders internationally, nationally, and by the state. So we looked at Arizona very carefully and discovered that the governor's emergency powers, those executive emergency powers, are going to expire. And you would find the same probably in every state, every country for that matter. The goal of the enterprise, of the owners, is to make sure that those are not temporary executive powers, executive emergency powers. They want to make them permanent. So how does that happen? Well, okay, so we'll get Arizona law. The governor can petition the legislature. It seems to be a member of the House and a member of their Senate together can make the decision to try and not try, but actually turn these powers from being temporary into permanent. And that happens by virtue of a report. So the governor of Arizona provides a report based on the Arizona Public Health Department and what information they're providing the governor so that he can say, oh, this emergency is not going away. COVID is never going away. I think Fauci said that yesterday. We're only in phase one of phase five. So they will use that as a justification. In this particular case, there was a letter penned as a group of concerned doctors, I believe is what it was styled as, and 1,200 or so people theoretically signed this petition to the governor saying, oh, this emergency is never going away. We're going to have to do something permanently. And it talks about all the usual elements you would have seen in the 2016 regulation about shielding and isolation, tracking, tracing, this command and control structure. They're asking the governor to do that. I find that very specious that, at the critical time the IGAs arrived, the intergovernmental agreements, we so happen to have this letter from concerned doctors, many of whom that are named in this thing. I sincerely doubt they exist, or if they do, they're certainly not practicing. So it's fabricated. That's what I'm trying to communicate. It's a fabricated catalyst to give the governor permanent powers that eliminate your constitution and human rights.
It really is terrifying, actually. And one of the, since I live in Arizona and practice medicine here, it really is alarming that this is all taking place under the cover of darkness with Cochise County and other counties in Arizona that have signed these intergovernment agency agreements and the governor's orders. And then here's this orchestrated healthcare, concerned healthcare workers letter, open letter. And I have read that letter. They are making many false statements. And in fact, they are failing to address the very reasons that our hospital crisis that they claim exists, the reason it exists, have to do with actions that the hospitals have carried out themselves. And one is the vaccine mandates that required, that were illegal, and many people knew it, and many people had many reasons, medical and religious and otherwise, to choose not to take this experimental shot. So they didn't. They were fired. So the hospitals fired their workers. That was the initial step that created the shortage of healthcare workers. Then in Arizona, we have thousands and thousands of illegals being brought across our borders. The borders are basically wide open. Border Patrol is overwhelmed. I've talked with members of the Border Patrol. The migrants are not screened medically for anything. They're not vaccinated. So they bring in illness. And I've been writing about that since 2014. Then there is the categorical interference with the doctor-patient relationship, refusing early treatment quickly to keep people out of the hospital. And the hospitals themselves engage in that when people go to the emergency room and they're told, oh, well, you're not, yes, you have COVID. Yes, you're having trouble breathing, but you're not really sick enough. Go home and maybe you'll get better. Maybe you won't. If you don't, come back and then we'll admit you to the ICU, put you on a ventilator and kill you. Basically is what's happening. And so interference with normal early treatment, and then the government policies that are forcing the shutdown of services that compensate the hospital, elective surgeries that normally are the hospital's bread and butter, and cancer treatments, cardiac surgery, all kinds of things. Those are shut down in case they need more COVID beds. So they lose their reserve capacity financially, making them more and more dependent on the government handout under the CARES Act that incentivized them to engage in these death protocols. So they have created the monstrosity that they then turn around and use as the justification for an emergency. It is diabolical and it's malevolent.
Yes,
and people need to know it exists.
Yeah. They do. And don't you find it specious that, was it just last week, the U.S. Supreme Court addressed part of this in terms of mandatory shots? They never, the case that I'm talking about in particular is Biden v. Missouri, had its companion case, Becerra v. Louisiana. And this was about the powers of HHS and whether or not they could require all of their employees to have these shots. Never did the Supreme Court address the issue that these are experimental shots. They sidestepped. They acted like that issue doesn't exist. These are investigational new drugs or investigational new devices. We're not entirely sure because they're genetic modification devices. Either way, they are experimental. And the Supreme Court sidestepped the issue and said, yes, the Director of Health and Human Services has the power to mandate these shots, without again defining them carefully as experimental, on the basis that there's federal funding involved. So let's extrapolate that for a moment and then apply it to a theoretical case that's not hard to imagine. Given that the CMS funding is involved, is the basis for compulsory use of experimental shots, gene modification shots. So given the intergovernmental agreements and the HHS powers to trace and track anybody suspected of having a communicable disease. People have been taking PCR tests. As a result of that, their genetic identification and materials already cataloged. It already exists in a computer database somewhere. And all you have to do is allege that person was in the same room with somebody else that had a communicable disease. That by itself would be enough to take them to a hospital, a healthcare facility for further diagnosis and treatment. That's where the new code comes in, right? The ICD-10 code. It's really easy then to diagnose them as having been exposed to this. And therefore, that code would then lead them into this quarantine center, where who knows what's going to happen. But what we do know is that they think the world's overpopulated, and we do know that they think that they have the right to force experimental drugs. If you're in the public health sector, you're under martial law. You have no rights. Once you're in those doors, once you're in the public health system, you're in the kill box. So again, the key to this thing is alleviating, removing these emergency powers, because that's the justification. And number two, eliminating this public health nonsense, right? That is the justification. If we eliminate those two things and stop them from intruding in our lives and stamping on our constitutional and human rights, we have a chance to get our planet back. And again, I say planet because this is global.
It is global, and yet we need to act locally and do all in our power to expose what the governor and the county officials in some of these Arizona counties are doing behind the scenes. This is an election year in Arizona, and we have a number of candidates for the U.S. Senate, for the Arizona Senate and House. And we have a gubernatorial race here in Arizona. So one of the things that we want to encourage all of our listeners, not only those in Arizona, but those around the world and those across the United States, contact people in your network and let them know what is happening on the ground in Arizona, which is a border state, which is subject to unique challenges and unique issues with the flood of illegals. But also, it's happening in Alaska. It's happening in other states, and we are just beginning to scratch the surface in some of the investigative work that Todd's firm and his team of whistleblowers have been bringing to light. So if any of you listeners know anything about what's happening in your state, we urge you to contact info@truthforhealthfoundation with your resources, ideas, suggestions that need to be pursued. And then as we think about what can citizens do to prepare themselves, Todd, what suggestions do you have on that as we're coming to the end of this show, which has flown by? What are your ideas on that?
I thank you for asking that. This is where I get to at every instance. How do we do something locally and immediately? And my appeal is to the family members, the wife, the brother, the sister, the husband of the people that are tasked with enforcing this. Those are people too, whether they're National Guard or whether they're healthcare workers, the doctor in the hospital or administrators, the people coding the patients. To alert them to what is happening, to educate them that they are really a cog in this great giant machine designed to kill as many people as is possible, particularly the unvaccinated, and those who are vaccinated, to envelope them in the machine for whatever the purpose is of the owners, and reach those people and cut off, you know, I'm not having dinner with you tonight. I'm not going to give you love, attention, and sex. I'm really disappointed in you, son or daughter, as the case may be. It is people that are aware and have the discernment to understand this that need to go and educate those people who would be tasked with enforcing this. At the very local level, that's what has to happen. It's in the household level. And then secondarily to that, people, find your grit. Go and run for sheriff. That's an elected position. It will be the sheriff's deputies that are charged with this, as is the military, as is the National Guard. Go run for office. You have an opportunity to effectuate this. This is about the survival of our species. Stand up. Say no. Don't go with the program. Civil disobedience and all of those things. That is our only hope.
You are right. And I also add, our hope is in the Lord, who is ultimately sovereign. And in all things, God works for good, for those who love him and are called by his name. So I urge all of our listeners to not only take the actions that Attorney Callender has presented and look at what you can do in your home to effect change, raise awareness, and take action, but also get down on your knees and pray that God will deliver us if we do our part and act in faith, that God will deliver us from the evil agenda that has been unleashed on the world. And as we look at truth for health, ultimately we stand on God's word as the ultimate truth. And that is truth for health, the rest of the story today. Get involved and get loud, speak out, stand up, and face all of this with courage and the strength of our Lord. Thank you for joining us today on Truth for Health, the rest of the story with Dr. Lee for America. Please go to our website, www.truthforhealth.org, and donate to support all of our public efforts to save lives and bring hope and help to people here in America and around the world.